Governor Scott Walker made it official yesterday. He launched his bid for a third term with a campaign rally in Waukesha. That is where we'll begin the state capitol report on this Monday, November 6th. The election is a year away. More than a dozen Democrats are either running or considering getting into the race to challenge Governor Walker. Sean Johnson is WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. Sean, welcome back to the program.
Hey.
Well, so we now have it official. Governor Walker is in this race, although he has led us some significant breadcrumbs up to this point.
Quite a few, yeah.
What do we know about his campaign?
Well, we know, I mean, he's given a sense all year, as you mentioned, that he was going to run for a third term, and he made it official over the weekend. So we know that Walker is going to campaign on stuff he's done in the past couple terms, namely tax cuts, tuition cuts. He's talking about the Foxconn bill as a big accomplishment for the state. He's talking about unemployment in Wisconsin being low, employment being high is a big accomplishment in the state. These things we know about Walker. And he's now talking to people about the fact that there's more that needs to be done, as he told the audience in on Sunday.
Let's take a listen.
We want a state where everyone shares. Everyone shares in our economic prosperity, whether you live in a big city or a small town, from one end of the state to the other. We want everyone to share in the Wisconsin comeback so that everyone can find not just a job, but a career to support themselves and their families going forward.
So everyone having a piece in a positive upward swing economy, how is Governor Walker delivering on that?
I think the biggest policy step he's taken this year, and the step that may be at the center of this campaign, it's hard to say what we're going to be talking about a year from now, but the Foxconn deal is pretty big in terms of something that happens in a governor's term, something that has his name on it. It is one of the largest deals of its kind ever. And it's a lot of state money and with the prospect of a very big project. So it's hard to imagine that not being big in the governor's race. He wants to talk about it. Democrats want to talk about it. So we'll probably be going to be talking about it.
And there are currently at least six candidates. I'm not exactly sure how many now who have thrown their hat into the ring to run for governor on the Democratic side.
It kind of depends how you decide who is a candidate. So if you go to the State Elections Commission website and you look at people who have formed a committee to look at running for Democrat, a lot of those names I think most people probably haven't heard of. That list is pretty long. If you narrow it down to people who have taken that step and who have come out and said, yes, I so-and-so am officially running for governor, people who've at least in some way made an effort to be part of the public sphere in the past, I think you can say safely there are six people who are running. And I think you could say that number could grow to seven or eight. Could grow more, but I think the point being it's not shrinking at this point. All right. So I think if you look at the six in alphabetical order, you've got State Superintendent Tony Evers, Milwaukee attorney and former state party chair Matt Flynn, Andy Gronick, some Milwaukee businessman, longtime activist Mike McCabe, State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, and State Representative Dana Walks.
Are these household names? Do voters have some backstory with these candidates?
They're probably not household names with most people. I mean, being a state party chair in the early 80s for Matt Flynn is not going to give you that statewide name recognition. Andy Gronick is new to politics. Mike McCabe has been out there as director of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign for a decade plus, but Mike McCabe's probably not a household name, and Kathleen Vinehout is a state senator, Dana Walks a state representative. I'm sure they're known in their parts of the state, and Vinehout is a favorite of kind of the base of the base of the Democratic Party, but they have their work cut out for them. Tony Evers has run statewide for three elections, so he has some statewide name recognition as state superintendent of public instruction, but even that is a a low turnout race, and it's a nonpartisan race. So when people go to the ballot box and punch Tony Evers' name, I guess you draw the line to Tony Evers' name. You know, there's not necessarily that he's the Democrat from me, because he hasn't run as one before. So I think just, you know, by the very nature of their background, they all have some getting to know you period, in store for them with voters.
Other Democrats considering running include Madison Mayor Paul Soglin and State Representative Kelda Royes. Let's first hear from Madison Mayor Paul Soglin a bit.
I've given a lot of thought to the question of running over the last 4 or 5 months, and I'm definitely leaning towards candidacy for governor. The polling that I've seen and the position I've got on issues, which I think is aligned with the people of the state, would mean a successful candidacy.
Will Soglin resonate outside of Madison?
That's a question for any of these voters. Soglin, in a large Democratic primary, certainly has something going for him. His name recognition in Madison, a Democratic stronghold, is strong. And so regardless of, you know, he has his critics in Madison, too. But if you look at his races for Madison mayor, he's done pretty well here. And then another candidate considering it, as you mentioned, Kelda Royes, who is a former state representative, ran for Congress, lost to Mark Pocan. But she's also considering it, but says it would kind of depend on whether there's a clear front runner at the start of next year.
Let's take a listen.
I want to have everything ready so that if I do decide to run, I can just kind of press go and jump in. So, you know, who's on my team? Who are the experts who are going to be helping me? What are the issues that I'm running on? All that stuff is things that we've worked on. And so I sort of have that stuff ready to go. But I want to make sure that, as I said, that I would be the strongest candidate. And if there's another candidate who seems to be doing really well and is making a strong case for him or herself, then I would, you know, certainly be interested in backing that person.
So very diplomatic there.
Yeah. But she is sending a pretty clear signal there. She brought that up. If there's somebody that we have rallied around as a party, Democrats, and they've fundraising numbers that show they're a serious candidate in early next year, and they got people, they have good people coming to their team, she would consider backing them. If that doesn't exist, Kelda Royes says she wants to get in.
Well, she said press go, which I'm thinking if anyone can press go, it's Governor Scott Walker. The men running Governor Walker's reelection campaign have been his longtime advisors, we've learned. Will Walker be following a playbook from previous campaigns?
I think so, and I think Scott Walker pressed go a long time ago, really. I mean, if you look at his fundraising numbers already for this year, he's been running for a while, just not formally until yesterday. He's got some names that have been with him in the past for statewide campaigns. Mike Grebe, who was the longtime head of the Conservative Bradley Foundation, a real powerhouse, not only in Wisconsin conservative politics, but nationally. Mike Grebe will be Scott Walker's campaign chairman. Joe Fadness, longtime political advisor of the governor and former executive director of the state Republican Party, will be Walker's campaign manager. He's also going to have R.J. Johnson as an advisor, and Keith Jilks, who has been involved in all the governor's successful races, will be on the team as well. I read somebody refer to it as the band's getting back together. Mm. And these are people that have been with Walker for a long time, although during they weren't all there for his presidential run. He brought in some new names for that. Of course, his presidential run was not successful and didn't go well. I mean, it fizzled out quickly. So these are people that he trusts and who have been with him during the successful times.
As we wrap up this, what kind of track record have we seen with Wisconsin governors earning third terms?
Third terms in general are hard to get. If you just look at the most recent history, Democratic Governor Jim Doyle decided not to run for a third term. Tommy Thompson did. I mean, Tommy Thompson, won four terms as governor and didn't mm-hmm. serve them out. So, Scott Walker is kind of following that path in a way. But just generally speaking, no matter where you're from, it is hard for governors to win third terms in the United States. So Scott Walker has that kind of stacked against him.
It is the State Capitol Report. We're getting the pulse on what's happening in Wisconsin politics as Governor Walker officially kicked off his campaign for a third term yesterday in Waukesha. Sean Johnson stays with us. He is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. Switching gears to discuss bills in the legislature, one would open hunting to children of all ages. The legislation is in the Senate. You can join in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update. State legislature is perhaps in a bit of a crunch time to pass bills since the legislative floor session is drawing to a close this week and lawmakers will not return to cast votes until mid-January. Bills get sent to the governor's desk next month. Sean Johnson stays with us. He's WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief and he's keeping track of the legislation moving through the Capitol and pending votes. Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. Will Wisconsin be better off lifting its sulfide mining moratorium? What do you think about anti-abortion bills like putting limits on research on fetal tissue from abortions? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, Sean, the repeal of the sulfide mining moratorium has sparked much discussion in recent weeks, and then the mining bill passed the assembly, up for a vote in the Senate tomorrow. What do we know here?
Yeah, so this is a bill that, you know, is commonly referred to as a moratorium, but what that moratorium means, as it was signed into law by former Governor Tommy Thompson in 1998, is it requires companies seeking to mine sulfide ores like copper, zinc, and gold to give examples of similar Canadian or U.S. mines that operated and were closed for 10 years without causing pollution before they're authorized to mine in Wisconsin. So when we're talking about sulfide mining, we're talking about mining for minerals in rock containing sulfide deposits. That comes with risks because exposing sulfide to air and water can cause acid drainage, which can pollute nearby streams. So, I mean, that is why, I mean, the risks are why Wisconsin has had the moratorium for almost 20 years now. It's the potential reward of a mining economy that has Republican lawmakers pushing to repeal that moratorium now. They passed it out of the assembly last week, as you mentioned, on a vote of 53-38. It's headed to the Senate tomorrow, and they wouldn't put it on the calendar in the Senate. Republicans wouldn't if they didn't feel like the changes that the assembly had made with the thought of getting Senate Republicans on board were good enough. So the fact that it's on the calendar tells you they want to pass it.
And the bill is really being pushed through about jobs, jobs, and jobs in northern Wisconsin. Do you see the Senate on board with that angle of furthering this legislation?
The majority of Republican senators were already there. I think you had a handful in the Senate. We heard from Assembly Republicans saying they just didn't have the votes in the Senate for the original bill. People like Senator Robert Coles were uneasy with this bill. So, we'll see what actually transpires tomorrow when they take this up. But, for the most part, Republicans in the Senate and Assembly were already there with that message. It is a similar message to one we heard a few years ago when there was another big, really more contentious mining bill involving iron mining in northern Wisconsin. This one is also a big deal, but it hasn't had quite the contentious debate that we had a few years ago.
But still hours of debate in the assembly before the vote.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a big deal. And this is something that, I mean, just the potential risks of sulfide mining really worry some lawmakers, especially some Democratic lawmakers. And in 1998, it worried a broad bipartisan majority of the legislature, too. So it was less of a partisan issue back then.
And Governor Walker had voted for it.
He did,
in 1998.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, times have changed. And now the thing you hear pretty frequently from Republicans who support this bill is, you know, we all stare at our electronic devices and use these metals in our daily lives. But we don't want to mine these, you know, these products here. We can do it right in Wisconsin. And so they want to repeal the moratorium.
Let's bring in Mark in Plover. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
I don't understand why we don't ever seem to quite get it, okay? We sell our environment off in favor of jobs and in favor of money, and then it gets messed up and people are sick and people are dying. We say, oh, gee, we shouldn't have done that. It's a repeated cycle, and this is just the next cycle of that, isn't it?
Mark, thanks for calling. I recall one of the co-authors of the legislation said he would have a picnic on top of the Flambeau mine, saying that we can make these sites bring the site back to what restore the environment after a mine closes. But are we compromising the environment here?
I think the Flambeau mine in particular has been held up as both a reason that this can be done and a reason for caution, because there was some pollution in a neighboring stream to that site. So, mining is a risky business, no matter how good your state law. Technology has improved, and regulation has improved compared to the mining boom of 100 years ago. But it is inherently risky because of the, you know, what you're dealing with under the earth.
Let's move on to another bill that's certainly generated a lot of buzz. The Youth Hunt Bill passes the assembly, eliminating age restrictions for mentored hunts and eliminates one gun restriction. What do we know about this bill?
Yeah, right now, a mentored hunt can take place in Wisconsin with kids as young as 10. They can go on a hunt with an adult, a mentor, and they can carry one gun between them. So under this bill, any kid, a kid of any age, could go on that mentored hunt. So, I mean, it's just a theoretical example, but like a 2-year-old could go on a hunt. It probably would help if they could hold a gun, but there's no age restriction is the point. So, I mean, the more common example that was thrown around the floor debate last week was, what about my 5-year-old grandson? What about my 7-year-old? I mean, this is where lawmakers were thinking about it, because they would be allowed to go on these mentored hunts. And that one gun restriction is seen by some lawmakers and at least one hunting group, the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, is kind of a big deal. Right now, on a mentored hunt, you can carry one gun. Under this, the kid could carry a gun and the adult could carry a gun. It's a pretty lively debate on this one in the assembly last week. Democrat Gary Hebel of Sun Prairie was one of those who was not in favor of the bill. Gary Hebel said, look, what if I take my 5-year-old grandson out in the woods? He didn't like that idea at all.
The insanity of having two guns and a kid at any age. I mean, look what's going on in our country. And look at the direction you're taking on safety. Absolute insanity.
You can just hear the trauma in his voice there. I mean, his words are pretty compelling.
Yeah, he came back to that point a couple times, too. And that was met with a refrain from Republicans that, look, yeah, you know, you don't have to do this. You don't have to take your 5-year-old out there. Rob Stafschult, the Republican sponsor from New Richmond, said this is a choice that should be in the hands of parents and not the government.
If you don't think they're ready under the age of 10, then please don't take them. This gives the choice back to the parent.
So this heads now to the Senate, and this is also on the calendar for the Senate, too. So it looks like they want to move on this as well.
Tomorrow?
I believe so, yes.
It's like I said before, it is crunch time here. It feels like there are a lot of bills moving through right now.
Yeah, and I mean, they could always delay these things until next year. There's nothing saying that this has to pass right now, but I think the Senate has kind of loaded up a fairly controversial calendar for tomorrow. So it's going to be probably a long day.
Late night. Yes, we are talking right now with Sean Johnson. He is WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief. He's keeping track of the legislation moving through the Capitol on this State Capitol report. Join in at 800-642-1234. And what is piquing your interest on bills moving through the State Capitol? Sean, Senate passed a bill that aims to replace lead pipes. What do we know about this?
This one was less controversial, at least in the Senate. So this one passed 33-0, one of those rare big bipartisan bills. And what it would do is it would set up a grant, or it would let local municipalities or local water utilities set up a grant or loan program to help replace lead pipes. And specifically, the section of lead pipe that runs from the edge of somebody's property to their home. So right now, if a city wants to replace all their lead pipes, they only have so much power to do that. They can do this the stuff that's under city streets, but if they just do that and they don't replace pipes that connect somebody's home, that actually makes matters worse, not better. And so what they did in the Senate is they said, water utilities, you can offer a grant or loan program to people to replace their lead pipe on private property, and to pay for that grant or loan program, water utility rates can go up citywide. That passed unanimously in the Senate, but Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he's a little concerned with that it might lead to a situation where people who have already paid out of their own pocket to replace their lead pipes will end up paying for other people's too. So maybe need some changes to get through the Assembly.
Another couple bills regarding abortion moving through the state capitol. Senate passed a bill to prohibit state workers' health insurance plans from covering abortions, except in specific circumstances. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so it's my fault. There is the Assembly that passed
it. Oh, the Assembly,
That was my notes that were bad there. And it was, as you said, it would prohibit state health insurance programs from covering abortions for state workers. I think the impact of a ban like this would be minimal from all information that's out there, because state health insurance plans currently cover only medically necessary abortions, but current state law doesn't define a medically necessary abortion. And so this bill puts a definition to that to further restrict it. And that's what passed the Assembly last week. A similar bill did not pass the legislature a few years ago. There was strong opposition to it then. It's not clear what's going to happen with this bill. It did pass the Assembly.
Let's bring in David now in Milwaukee on this. Hi, go ahead, David.
Oh, Dave is fine. You know, there's an oft-used phrase, especially last election cycle, whereby someone warns a political opponent that they might want to make sure they're on the right side of history. And I've never heard anyone speak glowingly of the Roman Empire in terms of its legality of infanticide. Religion has no part in this. It's common sense.
So, Dave had been calling in about the abortion bill, saying most Wisconsinites support something like this. But what does it look like in terms of the how this bill is going to go forward?
I don't know what's going to happen in the Senate. That information might be out there, but I don't know. I couldn't tell you right now what's going to happen.
Well, lawmakers introduced a bill to let Tesla sell its cars in Wisconsin directly. What's going on there?
Yeah, Tesla makes electric cars, and this is a thing that some people really want. I mean, there's interest in having electric vehicles, but right now, if somebody in Wisconsin wants to get a Tesla car, they have to go to another state to buy it. Tesla wants to sell those cars directly to people, and they don't want to go through Wisconsin auto dealers. And so that's what this legislation would do, is let Tesla sell its cars directly to consumers in Wisconsin.
Oh, kind of like fixing a loophole, perhaps.
Well, I mean, so auto dealers don't look at it that way, because this would, I mean, this would kind of cut them out of the normal process. They say a dealership is there to establish competition and to be another voice to kind of look out for the consumer. So they are opposed to this plan that Tesla introduced with the help of lawmakers at the Capitol last week.
Another thing happening last week, State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss confronting a little bit on the redistricting lawsuit in the Supreme Court. What do we know about Speaker Voss?
Yeah, this was interesting. This was included in a profile of Ohio Governor John Kasich in New York Magazine. In the profile of Kasich, the focus is on his presidential aspirations, saying that he's basically running for president right now for the 2020 election cycle. So the paragraph on Voss was deep down in that, but it said that Voss he amicably approached the governor, Governor Kasich, and then, quote, swore at him for adding his name to a Supreme Court brief opposing Republican gerrymandering in Wisconsin. New York Magazine said, quote, they had a heated exchange in which Voss accused Kasich of betraying his party. So Voss was asked about that last week. He did confirm that he spoke with Kasich and said he was disappointed that Kasich kind of stepped into an issue that he didn't know much about. That's what he told him. Wouldn't say whether he swore at the governor. Said he can characterize it however he wants. He didn't think he accused Kasich of betraying his party. Said, quote, I don't think I used those exact words, but it might have been his implication. But clearly Voss is unhappy with this. So a little background on that. Kasich and Arnold Schwarzenegger and some other prominent Republicans signed on to this brief saying to the U.S. Supreme Court, overturn Wisconsin's Republican-drawn political map, that gerrymandering had served to kill bipartisanship throughout the country, and that maps like Wisconsin's served only to entrench a party in power. This is the same message that you're hearing Democrats make, and as they try to take down Wisconsin's map. And so Voss clearly not happy with Kasich stepping into that. He felt like Kasich was kind of throwing them under the bus as part of his presidential campaign. But he said, you know, when he was asked if Kasich kind of moved on this after Voss talked to him, he said, no way, not even close.
And certainly it's telling us that redistricting is still very present on the minds of state lawmakers and on the national scene.
And we didn't mention this, but the next governor would be the person who signs the next redistricting plan, which is why people who watch governor's races nationally are really focused on this cycle, because you're going to elect three dozen new governors potentially, and they're going to have a hand in redistricting for the next decade.
Taking a look at the week ahead here as we begin to wrap up, Sean, what's in store for us first in the Senate here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, there's the Senate has resolutions on the agenda calling for a convention of the states, which is like an Article 5 convention to amend the U.S. Constitution, and they are to create a balanced budget amendment. But experts say that if you open this up and you start amending the Constitution in an Article 5 convention, there's really no parameters on what that convention could do. So Wisconsin is, if they pass this out of the Senate, which has already passed the Assembly, Wisconsin would be lending its support to a national effort to hold one of these conventions. And the number of states needed, it's getting pretty close to that threshold where one would be called.
All right. Well, we'll keep watching, and you'll be keeping working. It sounds like you've got a lot on your plate right now. But Sean, thanks so much for getting us up to speed.
You're welcome.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. You can follow him on Twitter at SJohnsonWPR. He's been recapping the status of major legislation that's moving through the state capitol. We'll be back after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.